Well, I'm delighted to see all of you here and so many people interested in providing early pregnancy education to those women who may have recently decided to make the decision for life. So it's kind of a tenuous spot we're in sometimes in the pregnancy care world where we get to see those flips happen from time to time. And then sometimes there's delays in when we can start keeping the ball moving. And so that's what this presentation is about. Early pregnancy consultation is something to stand in the gap between that decision for life and then when she can get in to start services with an OB provider and with the center and the services that we can provide there. My name is Katie Pope. I'm the nurse manager at Advice and Aid Pregnancy Center. As you can see, there's two names up here, but there's only one person up here. My partner, Regina, who's a clinical social worker, master's level social worker, was supposed to be here with me today, but COVID has struck Advice and Aid. Regina doesn't have it, but she's needing to quarantine because of an exposure at work. It's been the most amazing thing with COVID and Advice and Aid. Because it's not that nobody else at our center has gotten COVID, because we have. It's just God's providence has orchestrated it so beautifully that nobody's ever been exposed at work before. And so we were able throughout all of 2020 to stay open. We never had to close once for COVID, which was kind of a scary place to be at times, as I'm sure you can all relate. But now that we're more prepared and we feel like we can handle some of these curveballs a little bit better, now we're experiencing some workplace exposures. And so Regina had to stay home, and she's really sad that she couldn't come with and be with us today. So indulge me as I navigate through her portion of the presentation. Just a little bit about our mission. I'm sure it's similar to many of your missions at your pregnancy centers. But Advice and Aid exists to encourage women and families facing an unplanned pregnancy to choose life by serving them before, during, and after the pregnancy with Christ-like compassion. So we aim to make abortion unthinkable one life at a time. So we're there for the one. This is our little center. We have the bottom floor, but in the spring, we've been blessed to, now we're going to be able to take over the top floor of this building. So what you can't see by looking at this building is, if I'm standing facing it, the front door, behind me is the largest abortion provider in Northeast Kansas. And so this is the battleground right here. This is kind of the front lines. You know, behind me are people on megaphones. Behind me are women driving in a succession for their abortion. Behind me are people peacefully praying on the sidewalk. And this is as we arrive to work every day. This is as we leave from work every day. So, you know what? It's not showing me my notes for all these. So just to give you a little more information about our about our center. Okay.
Do you want me to go find it?
Could you? It's not allowing me to continue. So we're literally 150 steps away from the front door of this abortion provider corporation. So because of that, and because of our proximity to the highway and the state line, we're only about a couple of miles from the state line. We get clients coming from all over. Not only Kansas, but Missouri, Nebraska, Colorado, and recently more from Texas. So, are you good with PowerPoint?
We'll see.
Okay.
I'm good with the camera. So.
We couldn't get it to presenter view on here so that my notes appeared over here, but we got it to at least, but now it's not letting me advance the slides, and I can't see my notes for each slide.
Katie, while he's doing that, could you speak up just
a sure, little yes, little you bet.
So you're on, what slide are you on, four?
That, yeah.
You're on four? And that's the slide
four. That's my
notes. Okay. So when you click down here, it won't. So you have to go up here.
Okay.
And just click down. And then that'll get you to your next one.
Okay.
Awesome. So I'll put you back on three where you was.
Okay.
Is that all right?
That's great. Thank you. Okay. Okay. So just to give you a little more information about our center and our location, I'd like you to watch this quick video. We actually moved here 5 years ago instead of two. We're in Overland Park, Kansas. Yeah.
Katie, what road are you on in like first abortion clinic?
We're on Granada Lane. Granada Lane. So really, between us and the abortion clinic is just our parking lot and their parking lot. So our parking lots connect, and yeah.
Were you there after they were there? Were you
Yes. So we were in a kind of a high rise, a block away from there, and then in 2016 we had the opportunity to move right across the parking lot from the abortion clinic.
But they just hated that.
Actually, people wander into our clinic fairly often thinking they're there. And so that's the beautiful part. Google actually helps them out a little bit because they take them to our driveway. So we love that. And as you saw in the picture, we have that big light blue sign that says abortion information and free. So those two words tend to get people in, and they just wander in. And we have two really good receptionists who are really good at getting them to stay and receive services. And so many, many women stay if they wander in. And that is a daily thing. We have at least one, many times. The other day we had six walk-ins in one day.
So how do you, that's my mind thinking, how do you like navigate that? Do you have like a bunch of people there on standby, or
yes,
have people in? Or
we do. Yeah, we have a rather large staff for a pregnancy center, full-time receptionists, and then we have volunteers who are client advocates, and they come in shifts. We always have one there, and if they're not there for whatever reason, all of our staff is trained as client advocates, okay, and so we can fill in and step in when needed. And that's what had to happen during COVID. Is we had we ended the volunteers coming during that time, and we just had the staff, which we divided into two teams, A and B. And so when only the A people interacted with each other, only the B team. So that if for some reason COVID did sweep through one team, it wouldn't necessarily hamper the other team. So that's kind of how we handled it. But we really missed our volunteers because they're the experts really at talking with the clients, and they've done it a lot.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's the problem.
Yeah, I can get the video going. It's just your notes you won't be able to see from here.
Ooh, that'll be fun.
I have a lot of questions.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's just wing it with the slides.
How many do you average a day?
Clients?
Yeah.
Well, if you saw our schedule, it's pretty packed almost every hour. We do half-hour appointments, but as you know, they don't always show up. So,
okay. We got that, but it's
okay.
Yeah.
We moved here almost 2 years ago.
So to get to the next slide, then, is still space bar.
You just use the down arrow or the right arrow.
Abortion facilities in the greater Kansas City area. They are one of only two local facilities that will perform both medical and surgical abortion services. And they are only 150 steps from our door. When a girl in Overland Park is looking to get an abortion, she travels past our office, just 150 steps from our door. But what about girls from other parts of the city? KCML, Olathe, Gladstone, Belton, Shawnee. You guessed it, they traveled here, 150 steps from our door. However, the picture is actually far greater than even that. You see, this abortion facility, just 150 steps from our door, is one of only two abortion centers providing both types of abortion for a much larger area than just Overland Park. In fact, the next closest facilities that will do this are located in Wichita, St. Louis, Tulsa, Omaha, Denver. There are girls traveling from great distances away to this facility, just 150 steps from our door. Girls travel from Lawrence, from St. Joseph, from Columbia, from Emporia, from Manhattan. They're traveling from all over the region to go just 150 steps from our door. And when they arrive, they see our sign. They see our office. They see our banners we occasionally have out front. They see our web address in the gazebo between the two offices. Because of those 150 steps, our impact is much, much greater than just reaching women in Overland Park. We are reaching women across the entire region, all because the front line of this war for human life is only 150 steps from our door.
So that's the battle we're dealing with. We kind of went into our typical client, but like I said, a lot of them are walk-ins. 40% of our clients are walk-ins from the abortion clinic, or they think they're going there, or they just wander in off the street. They're normally in their 20s. Most of our clients are in their 20s, and they're usually single with no other children. I do have my notes. Thank you, Jesus. Oops. I'm sorry, you guys. Awful. Let me just try to get a slideshow. Touch anything. This is kind of the race breakdown of our client, most Caucasian, but a disproportionate amount are African American and Hispanic. We have also been seeing a lot of Asian and African clients lately, as well as Middle Eastern. Normally, even if they're employed, they're making under $30,000 a year, and most will at least have an affiliation with Christianity, or no professed religion. That's 70%. So that's our general client. So how did we get to early pregnancy consultations? How did we identify this need? As you know, anytime you're thinking about offering a new service in your pregnancy center, it has to meet a demonstrated need. We don't want to offer services just to offer services, just because we need to do something new to impress our donors or something. There has to be a demonstrated need. And so because of our location and because we do get so many walk-ins, even we do tend to see a lot of flips in the sono room where clients are deciding to carry after they've been abortion-minded. And so We were seeing some overwhelming needs associated with that particular population of client. The overwhelming need was that there was a delay between when she decided to carry and getting her into see the doctor, basically. And that was for a variety of reasons. The main reason would be because the physicians weren't available necessarily. The other big reason is that they're uninsured or underinsured. And so, and that was complicated by so many other issues that I'm sure you've seen in your center, like poverty, homelessness, immigration status is a big one for us. We're seeing a lot of clients who are undocumented and therefore can't get state insurance, so that causes a big delay for when they can get to see a doctor. We have wonderful doctors that work with us, but they do need to get paid, and so it's really difficult when there's no hope of getting insurance. Other things like domestic abuse and just you name it, the problems that you see facing your center are all things that can stand in the way of her getting timely and appropriate prenatal care, even if she's decided to carry. And so that was the big problem that we had. And so we decided to bring those concerns and those needs, anytime we had a social need like that, to our medical advisory group. And here's where I wanted to do a commercial for our medical advisory group. If you don't have one, I wanted to let you, if that's a new term for you, I wanted to let you know what that was. Our medical advisory group is a group of professionals from diverse specialties. So we've got obstetricians, of course, we've got pathologists, we've got nurse practitioners, all of the nurses on staff are part of the medical advisory group, our executive director. And this is a group that meets quarterly, and we bring issues to them like changes in policies and procedures, specifically in the medical realm. We ask their advice on different things. They hold us accountable to providing good standard of care for our clients. And so if you don't have a medical advisory group, I really strongly suggest that you get one, because it's an invaluable resource for our center. And we're going to them all the time, even between meetings, just asking them questions when things like COVID come up. You know, do we mask? There's been an exposure. What do we do? So it's just nice to have those medical professionals in our speed dial so that we can get good advice from them. So we took all these needs and this delay in receiving prenatal care to our medical advisory group, and their recommendation was, you guys need a social worker. Because a social worker is a licensed professional who is accustomed to seeing these needs, these particular social needs, and they're familiar with the resources in the community, a role that the Pregnancy Help Center has traditionally been providing for the pregnant woman. But they have a much more in-depth knowledge of, say, you know, they have relationships with, like, the Division of Family Services and food banks and, you know, just different things that, with our narrow mission of the abortion-minded woman, we just can't be everywhere all at once. And so a social worker can kind of bridge that gap between this need, these social needs that are so diverse, and how they can be applied to the Pregnancy Resource Center. So that was the recommendation. You guys need a social worker. So we ended up hiring Regina, who was supposed to be here today, and she's a master's level social worker, been working for, 30, 40 years in social work in the Kansas City area, so she's very familiar with all the resources that are available, but not necessarily with the Pregnancy Resource Center model. So she had a lot of catching up to do, a lot of learning. Well, in the meantime, we had another opening at our center for a Spanish language translator, because as I mentioned, we were getting a lot of immigrants, undocumented people who didn't even speak English wander into our clinic. And so we hired a Spanish language translator, and as God's providence would have it, she's also a licensed social worker. So really, if that had happened the other way around and we had hired the Spanish language translator first and found out she was a social worker, I don't think we would have hired Regina. So it's just a beautiful example of how time and time again God provides for our ministry in that way, because we really do need two social workers. So Regina deals with most of our clients and their social work needs, but for the Spanish-speaking ones, then we have Amy, and she's wonderful too. So that's a really good problem to have, a problem of overabundance. I really don't know where I'm going to. Oh, okay. So the physician availability was our first problem, lack of medical insurance, people back in business. And these are the complicating factors, the homelessness, the underlying medical conditions that people say, oh, I have this, I have thyroid condition, I have diabetes, I can't, my doctor told me I can never have a baby. It would be dangerous for me to have a baby. You know, things that we deal with, that doctors deal with all the time. And we're like, not sure about that, that's really a reason. But childcare needs, unemployment, they have hunger, they have legal issues, they have domestic violence issues, gaps in education, substance abuse, mental health issues, transportation issues, language barriers, and the list goes on and on. So this is our medical advisory group. I'll just go real quick since I already talked about all this. There's Regina on the left, Amy on the right. Amy's our Spanish language translator. So let's just talk about a case study, just to kind of illustrate what we can do with the early pregnancy consultation for our clients. So Angel was a 19-year-old, this is a hypothetical client. Angel was a 19-year-old restaurant employee making minimum wage with no insurance. She had dropped out of high school with 1 year to go, and she came to our clinic seeking an abortion, citing financial and emotional pressure. Angel's boyfriend told her he would go along with whatever she wanted to do. Angel grew up Catholic but was not practicing her faith and did not want to tell her parents about the pregnancy. A sonogram revealed an 8-week baby's beating heart, and afterward, Angel stated she could not abort. Is Angel still at risk for abortion? Absolutely, you bet. So it's always exciting when somebody changes their mind about abortion when she's in our clinic, but the truth is nothing about her circumstances or situation has changed. When she walks out our door and sees that big abortion clinic right across the way, all that stuff's going to come rushing back. So all that pressure that led her to consider abortion will still be there when she walks out the door. So that's where early pregnancy consultation comes in. It's an intermediate step that stands in the gap between a decision to carry and establishing a relationship with an OB provider and other services. It's a multidisciplinary service, so usually a nurse and a social worker, and it takes about an hour. That's how we schedule it. So an hour and for the entire appointment. Remember, all those complicating factors that can prevent or delay prenatal care, those are the kind of things that the licensed social worker is trained to help with. So she has the expertise to identify needs and provide appropriate interventions and referrals to community partners and safety net services. So what is case management? And this is Regina's part, so bear with me. But case management is a service delivery system that assists eligible individuals to gain access to needed medical, social, educational, employment, basic needs, spiritual, and et cetera. Services in the community as identified by the client and can provide supportive guidance to them. Definition. So briefly, case management started in the 1950s, and that's when mental health institutions across the United States started being deinstitutionalized. So state hospitals started closing down, and all these people were pretty much released into the community. And so social work developed as an attempt to meet the needs of those individuals. But really, it developed as a way to unburden the Medicare and Medicaid system. And so helping these mentally ill people with providing resources and connecting them with community safety net programs sort of started saving them money. And so as a result, private insurance got in on it. They're like, hey, how can we get some of this social work because it's saving so much money in the Medicare and Medicaid system. And so different areas started adapting social work to meet their own needs. So, you know, nursing homes, schools, any place that, like Department of Family Services, they all started getting social workers, but adapting social work to their individual needs of their particular client population. And so, but nobody has really, had really developed that in the pregnancy care industry, ever. You know, you, if a pregnant woman had a concomitant problem, like maybe they had a drug addiction and they were in a treatment facility, yeah, they had a caseworker that could probably help them navigate that unplanned pregnancy. Or if somebody was in a domestic abuse situation and was hooked in with a shelter, okay, probably had a caseworker assigned to them, could probably help them navigate that unplanned pregnancy. But most pregnant women, as you saw from our demographics, they might have some of these social issues, but they aren't hooked into the system. And so there's no case manager there to guide them through that unplanned pregnancy and connect them with resources that could help them make a decision to carry. And so that's kind of what our model of the early pregnancy consultation was trying to address, was that get the social work services in there so that when the pregnant woman finds us, then she can be assigned a caseworker that can help meet her needs and maybe turn the tide so that she can make a decision for life. There's a couple types of social work. This gets kind of technical, but basically there's a kind that just meets needs and connects. You don't necessarily need a master's degree in social work to do that. It doesn't involve the counseling piece. The master's level social worker is if there's going to be any in-depth assessment and counseling, then you'd need a master's level social worker to do that. So in the pregnancy care model, it has not been a typical resource to have a professional social worker, but she can still address the complex challenges and help the woman decide to give life. So they collaborate with groups that are already in existence in the community. So we already have people who are really good at helping with immigration. We have organizations who can provide help with food assistance or domestic violence. And so the social workers' approach is to collaborate with those organizations already doing the work and just connect our pregnant women with those organizations. So back to Angel. In her case, so she came for an early pregnancy consultation and then started case management. The case manager might start meeting with her on an ongoing basis. Then she can address and prioritize Angel's stated needs, like the need to tell her parents about the pregnancy. Just kind of prioritize which needs to be done first and making a checklist. And then she can also identify the things that she hasn't mentioned, because as she gets to talking with her and the relationship gets formed, things are going to come up that the social worker can help with, but she didn't know that the social worker could help her with that, so she didn't bring it up. But those things tend to come up in the course of the assessment. And so she might uncover some unhealthy patterns or barriers that she can help with and help her overcome. She can also keep Angel accountable, and so she can give her a list of things to do and checking on her to make sure she's doing them between visits. So maybe one of her tasks would be, you need to apply for Medicaid. And then she'll call her the next week. Did you send in the application yet? It's not to do it for them. And most social workers are very good about holding the client accountable, because you can only help someone as much as you can't want it for them more than they want it for themselves. And so, but keeping them accountable is sometimes what they need. It's what they're used to. And when they're young like that, they're used to being told what to do anyway. So it's very helpful. And it's something that our client advocates, being volunteers, can't really keep on top of it. But a case manager, a social worker, is used to having a caseload of 40, 50 clients at a time. So here's the nuts and bolts of the early pregnancy consultation. The first part of the visit is with a nurse. And so we do a pregnancy intake. And it's a really short form, just looks like this. And I'm asking them things like, you know, do you have a cat? Or what symptoms are you having? Or do you have a doctor's appointment scheduled? Things like that. And so it gives me a little bit of information about what she's already done and what her needs might be, what her questions might be. Then we kind of go over symptoms of of pregnancy that she's been having, nausea, and we talk about remedies and safe medicines to take during pregnancy, and environmental hazards. We have a little book that we created. I wish I had enough to give everybody, but it's kind of part what to expect when you're expecting and pregnancy journal, so it's called My Pregnancy Journey. And it's just really a pretty book, but it's got a place for them to put sonogram image. It's filled with scripture. And then as you get further in, it compares your baby to a fruit at each week. And then as you get into it, there's all this information, too. You don't have to have this. Before we printed this, we used the resources that we always used for healthy pregnancy, from Focus on the Family and different resources like that. But this was just more to help our nurses, because they were like, yeah, it's so much information to go over. What do we go over with them? So this is kind of our guide. But it also gives them a place to write down, you know, when they have a doctor's appointment, they can write down their questions. They can write down how they're feeling during the pregnancy for next time, so that it's not so scary next time. So we go over that book with them. And then we answer all their questions and concerns that we can. I always keep a drug reference book in there, so we can, if they're on any medications, that's something we ask them. And so if there's any, you know, red flags, like a medicine that they're really not supposed to be taking when they're pregnant, then we can address that right away. And then we offer to make a doctor's appointment for them. We have certain doctors that allow us to do that, and we can make the appointment for them. That way we keep that momentum going, and then we also have a relationship with those doctors, so we know if they showed up, and we can keep tabs on them a little bit better. And then as I'm leaving, I'm going to give her a set of discharge instructions, and that's really important, because one thing we don't want is for her to think this is her prenatal care. That's something we have to be very careful about, not communicating to the client. So a discharge instruction does that, and it says very explicitly on there that the early pregnancy consultation is not prenatal care. And then I'm going to also give her a little case management assessment form. It's just a half sheet of paper, and it has a few big things on there that might be life issues that she might check as her top three concerns. Things like adoption, child care, domestic partner abuse, medical insurance, mental health issues. So she can check her top three. And then after she's done with that, I take that little half sheet, go talk to the social worker. She watches a little video on prenatal development. And then the social worker can look this over, you know, kind of get her ducks in a row and figure out what she's going to talk to her about. And then she comes in the room, and the first thing she says is, wasn't that amazing, that prenatal video? Isn't the body amazing? Isn't God amazing, what he's doing inside you? And then more times than not, she's like, yeah, that was so cool. And she just starts opening up. And then Regina can get to know her a little bit. Now, when we first started this early pregnancy consultation, that visit turned into a pretty long conversation. So she ended up doing a full-blown intervention usually during it. So we kind of needed to rein that in. And so she now it's just an introduction to case management. So she'll give her a little card like this that just lists all the things that she can help with, Regina. And things like housing and helping you get your GED if you need it, and what case management is. She gives her a business card, and she just, if some of these needs are something that she thinks she can help with after talking with her for a little bit, then she'll ask her to make an appointment and come back the next week. And that's when she'll have her sign a contract about what she's willing to do in her own care and what Regina's able to help her with. And so that way it's there's some accountability there and some buy-in from the client. And so and that way she can have a longer visit next time. So that's this part. The case manager will meet with her, explain case management, and give her a business card and brochure, and then she'll make an appointment the following week. So who's a good candidate for early pregnancy consultation? We allow the women and their partners to come because we think it's important for them to collaborate together and take some stock in this pregnancy, both of them. So if he's available, he's welcome to come. But first-time mothers are really good candidates because they have a lot of questions. And often, we're the only people who know that she's even pregnant. And so she can't really ask her mom right now, you know, all these questions that are running around in her head, but she can ask us because we already know. So people with the common barriers like no insurance or immigration issues, poverty and homelessness, domestic abuse, those are all good candidates, people who need to finish their education. Who's not a good candidate for early pregnancy consultation? Right now, anyway, the abortion-minded or the abortion-determined are not really a good candidate for early pregnancy consultation. Why? It's premature. Because nobody's ready to talk about how best can I take care of this baby when they don't, we're not even sure they want to have a baby. So that's kind of obvious. But people who've had an inconclusive sonogram, not really good candidates, again, because it's premature. We don't know if she has a viable pregnancy yet. So we need to make sure everything's progressing normally before we offer this. And it's come up, it comes up every week that there's an unhealthy pregnancy or there's no baby or whatever, and we need to send them on for further care. So we don't offer early pregnancy consultation until we have a conclusive sonogram. And then people who are, we do get this, and that we love when happy carries come in. We love it when people who are trying to be pregnant, married, in a good situation, come into our center. During COVID, we only took abortion-minded clients, and our nurses and staff really felt the heaviness of every day because every client who came in was abortion-minded. So we really need these likely to carry clients to come into our center just for our own mental health. But they're not necessarily good clients for early pregnancy consultation. They're fun to have in there, but it's not really our mission. And mission creep is real on this. And so if she's vulnerable, and most of our clients, frankly, have some kind of vulnerability, schedule her for that early pregnancy consultation. Establish that relationship with her. So why do we do it? And why do we think you should too? First of all, it maintains the momentum that we began in the sono room. Like I've kind of pounded that into the pavement, but when there's a gap in care, they decided to carry, yay. They go back out, all the problems are still there, boyfriend's still there, encouraging abortion. You know, it's really easy for that to flip around if there's a 2-week delay before she can get in to see a doctor. So we can also address those immediate needs until we can form an ongoing relationship with a medical provider. So say she's on a medication that's going to cause birth defects, we need to address that right away. Say she's in a domestic abuse situation, we need to address that right away. That can't wait. And so it allows us to identify those issues and deal with them. And then also it keeps the client connected to our center. All centers struggle with accountability, like figuring out what the heck happened with this pregnancy. When we can keep track of her and can keep her coming back, we know what happened with the pregnancy. So it's a beautiful thing for her because she's getting the services, and it's a beautiful thing for us because we get some resolution and we know what happened with her pregnancy. We know if what we're doing is working or not. It also establishes us, the Pregnancy Resource Center, as an authoritative source of information. And so if she knows she can trust us for good information about her pregnancy, she's more likely to come back to us in the future if she is in a similar situation. So what an early pregnancy consultation is not is prenatal care. And like I said, in the discharge instructions, it's very important that we, number one, tell her during the visit this is not prenatal care. It does not replace prenatal care. And also in our discharge instructions that we make that very explicit. So what we've learned so far, we've learned a lot and we're still learning. Clearly, I'm not standing before you as an expert on anything because it's a new program. We just started this year. But what we have learned so far is that most clients could benefit from case management. And so, you know, probably I could benefit from case management. You know, if I went in and saw a social worker, I'm sure she'd see things she could help me out with. But mission creep is a real temptation because of this. We are in a helping profession. When we hear people's stories and we see, you know, the hard things that they're dealing with and we know we could help, it's hard to not help them. But we really, that's when we really have to focus in on our mission and why we're there. We're there to help the abortion-minded woman choose life. And so, yeah, we could help that married woman who's happy with her WIC. We could help her apply for CanCare, but we need to make sure we stay tight with the mission. We've also learned that lots of issues come up after the EPC that we didn't even know about. We get to know these clients a lot better, and that helps us to help the next client a lot better when we can really see the whole picture of what clients are dealing with. And then immigration status is more of a factor than we thought. We didn't know so many people were undocumented and having issues with that, so we've really had to adapt our resources and make new relationships with people in the community who can help with that. So those are some of the things that we've learned. And so just in conclusion, I wanted to read to you just a reflection about what early pregnancy consultation is trying to accomplish, what we're trying to accomplish in the pregnancy help movement. And it's called Prophets of a Future Not Our Own. It helps now and then to step back and take a long view. The kingdom is not only beyond our efforts, it's beyond our vision. We accomplish in our lifetime only a tiny fraction of the magnificent enterprise that is God's work. Nothing we do is complete, which is a way of saying that the kingdom always lies beyond us. No statement says all that could be said. No prayer fully expresses our faith. No confession brings perfection. No pastoral visit brings wholeness. No program accomplishes the church's mission. No set of goals and objectives includes everything. This is what we are about. We plant the seeds that will one day grow. We water seeds already planted, knowing that they hold future promise. We lay foundations that will need further development. We provide yeast that produces far beyond our capabilities. We cannot do everything, and there is a sense of liberation in realizing that. This enables us to do something, and to do it very well. It may be incomplete, but it is a beginning, a step along the way, an opportunity for the Lord's grace to enter and do the rest. We may never see the end results, but that is the difference between the master builder and the worker. We are the workers, not master builders. Ministers, not messiahs. And we are prophets of a future not our own. One thing I didn't mention, too, is we do give the ladies a goodie bag when they leave, and it's got all the information that we talked about during the visit. It's got that book in it. It's got tips and tricks on for nausea. It's got MedicSafe medication list. It's got a water bottle, and it's got some fanny packs and any swag that we can get anybody to give us. Somebody gave us these cute shirts, so we put those in there. hand sanitizer. And the things in here are generally designed to kind of review the things we've talked about, like self-care, hygiene, nutrition, that kind of thing. So with that, who's got a question? Yes.
So you touched on this briefly as far as, you know, the value of having social workers come in because they have that in-depth knowledge of local resources that maybe a client advocate volunteer would not. But what would you say the other major differences are between a case management session and your typical client advocate discussion that you maybe do with all of your clients?
Right. It is a lot similar. The great thing about Regina is she is a master's level social worker, so she is able to do a clinical assessment of the patient, in-depth client intake. She's allowed to contract with them for continuing services. She's able to, she's had all kinds of continuing education and training in-depth in domestic abuse or substance abuse or the different things that they could be. So it's just it's the difference between seeing it's just a higher level professional who's trained in counseling and intervention that way. So whereas a client advocate is a very good, you know, mentor and somebody who can walk alongside you, it's not like a client-patient doctor relationship or patient social worker relationship. It's a very specific set, which is why you have to be licensed to do it. Yes.
I am struggling with understanding when you say that a woman who hasn't necessarily decided to keep her baby is not a candidate, because in my mind, and I'm sorry, I'm new stepping into all of this, so you all may already know the answers here, but I would think, like, being able to discuss those things would give them the great hope to be able to say, I can keep my baby. You know what I mean?
Thank you for that question. That's a really good question. Because sometimes we'll do a modified early pregnancy consultation for just that purpose. If we suspect, first of all, a lot of times women who are determined to have an abortion will state every reason under the sun, social barriers. And we had a client like this before where, she was getting kicked out of her house and had substance abuse problems and mental illness issues and all these things. And Regina met with her, checked all the boxes, got her resources for all those things, and she still aborted. So sometimes their stated excuses are just that, excuses, mm-hmm. and it's not going to change her mind, even if we address all of them. So that's when we need to at least have a stated intention to carry. Now, as you know, people vacillate. Even people who are happy to be pregnant, sometime in their pregnancy are like, what was I thinking? I don't know if I can do this. So that is normal, but we need to have at least a stated intention so that it's at least a willingness to work on some of these issues and address them. So definitely we would keep a client like that coming back to meet with a client advocate, but we just wouldn't initiate the early pregnancy consultation yet because she's not ready to hear about, what's the best nutrition for my baby? Why do I need folic acid? You know, it's just premature if she's not even thinking she's going to care.
Yeah, you were just mentioning, like, medications in pregnancy, and I was just wondering how you kind of go about it, like, having somebody who's on multiple, medications for mental illness or whatever, and, some of them you stop before somebody you need to so I always kind of mentioned to just follow up with whoever prescribed that.
Got it. Yeah. So the question was, what if she's on a lot of medicines that she's not supposed to be on, or mental health, and it's just a complicated situation? And she said what she does is refer them back to the prescribing doctor, and that's exactly right. Again, back to those discharge instructions. We're not providing prenatal care. We don't want to give the impression we're providing prenatal care. So whoever prescribed that prescription needs to know she's pregnant, and she needs to be told to tell that provider that she's pregnant, and they need to make the decision about how to wean off different psych meds or switching from one medication to another. That's not our call. Good question.
Right. But do you have a list of medications safe in pregnancy? Did you get that from just CDC or something?
Yeah, when we got it from our medical director, he gave us a list of safe medications to take during pregnancy. Clearly, all the ones they're not supposed to take are not on there, so we just have a nurse's drug book. Keep it up to date, and we can look up medications in their pregnancy category.
Mm-hmm. So once they've seen the social worker, you've done the EPC, they've decided to carry, does Regina see them throughout the pregnancy then, or does she refer them at that point to a client advocate?
Because Thank you for
we
that.
We see them that whole pregnancy and a few months after the baby's born?
Yes.
Or do they do both of them?
Yeah. So if she does the intake and decides that there are issues that she can help with, or that she decides there's a need for continued follow-up in order for these things to get accomplished, she'll establish a relationship with them and have her sign that contract and determine the frequency of the visits and how often she needs to come back. And then I think we've approved, this is all subject to change, but how long after the baby's born have we approved for her?
6 weeks.
6 weeks after the baby's born, she can continue. Yeah. And then, of course, we have, at the same time, other parenting programs going on where she's still connected to our center for up to 2 years. So our parenting program is called Connections, and she can be in that until her baby's 2 years old.
So do you have education classes
yes.
too? Okay, that's
yeah.
what we do too.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she can participate on both. She can be doing ongoing case management with
okay.
Regina, but then she can participate in the education parenting program. At the same time.
And we want that. We want
That's
her connected
the more,
to, yeah.
The more holistic.
The more, right,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And to
you.
Her question, I'm executive
this
director.
This is Ruth.
to your question is, a client advocate's knowledge to some degree is limited. The licensed social worker has been trained to recognize additional things that a client advocate might not be able to address. And so, like Katie said, brings a different level of evaluation for that patient. And there's that continuing case management. What is it that she does? It's like a plan. So they go through this plan continually. That is not something that you would do with a client advocate. So that's part of the difference.
So how many clients do you have on average going through? I know there are different stages in their pregnancy, but how many clients would Regina carry at on an average?
She's a little frustrated about this because she's used to carrying a caseload of 40 or 50, whatever. Right now, I think she's got 17.
Okay. Thank you.
So she's like, come on, you can do better.
It sounds very similar to the A2A program. Are you familiar
I'm not.
With that? Okay. Yeah. That's a Missouri thing.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Our assistant director is.
What is it?
Alternatives to Abortion.
Okay.
It's a state-funded program that allows, a case manager to take those clients into a little bit deeper level. Not just mentally and emotionally, but financially as well. So.
Which is a beautiful thing for centers who don't have access to a social worker or the client base to hire a social worker necessarily.
In Kansas, we don't have that.
We don't.
Yeah,
some other states do, but
it's not a
Her master's level social work does allow her to do some counseling. Yes. Any other questions? All right. Well, if you'd like Regina's card, I have some brochures up here. You can take a look at the goodie bag if you'd like. Don't forget
your email in case.
Yeah, my card's here with my email if you'd like that. And I appreciate your patience with my technical difficulties. Get that straight before this afternoon. Okay, and don't forget to fill out your survey.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of your day.